Mini episode 537 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
30 seconds.
In front of all these people, you're going to pull out a gun and you're going to shoot an unarmed man.
20 seconds.
So what are you going to do?
10.
Welcome to the FDH Lounge and the Justified episode recap.
It was justified.
With your original dignitaries.
Fire in the hole!
Rick Morris and Jason Jones.
You got ice cold water running through your veins.
Breaking down each Justified episode the moment they've concluded.
Did you take a peek inside the soul of Raymond Newton?
I'm just gonna let that old dog lie.
Real-time reactions. Next level analysis.
You seem to be harboring a bit of hostility there, brother.
So I've been told.
And now, your dignitaries.
Well, I believe we can take her from here.
Welcome, everyone, to mini episode number 537 of the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Jason Jones, your FDH Lounge dignitaries, breaking down Justified episode 6.9 for you also. And also representing not just another TVsite.com, of course, I am the Justified columnist over there, also covering Better Call Saul, and I have coverage up for season 3 of House of Cards as well. But if you're looking to get the coverage of Justified, Jason's and my shows have been on there the entire season, as well as my columns for Justified analyzing it. So dual coverage within the 21st Century Media Alliance with the FDH Lounge and not just another TVsite.com. Episode 6.9, Burned. I am looking very much forward to getting Jason's thoughts on this. For me, this is an episode that's on the top tier all time. I would say Bloody Harlan, Decoy, Shot All to Hell. I think we have a fourth one there. I think we have a fourth member of the Grand Slam. Maybe, hopefully, with four episodes left in the series, more to add to that. But for my money, that's where we're at right now. Let's see what Jason thinks. My man, Jason Jones, FDH Senior Editor. Jason, your thoughts on 6.9 tonight?
Well, I hate to maybe rain on the parade, but I'm going to want to hear a little extrapolation on this idea, because I thought it was great. Don't get me wrong. It had major moments that you don't tend to see unless it's a premiere or a finale. So in that regard, absolutely. I definitely say it's in that top tier. Whether it's all things all shot to hell or Decoy, I may need to get some convincing, because it felt like it was just a marginal episode until things started to go bad. And then, you know, then we're in the driver's seat on the highway. So if that's the issue, the high point moments were exceptional, then I'm on board. But in general, I feel like I might have missed something based on your enthusiasm. Well, not that I disagree. I just want to hear more about it.
There was a lot that that happened, so much that we're going to struggle to do justice to it in the entirety of the time that we have here. I'm going to start by mentioning something I had said earlier in the season and just kind of breaking kayfabe a little bit, and that is that as I write the weekly Justified columns and not just under TVsite.com, again, with everything that's got to be done, with being on deadline, with how this is all squeezed in, I always cheat. I always start the column before the show, because when you're doing it for an episodic show, you're picking up from where it left off last week, what we've seen thus far this season. So I started writing this week's column about the pacing of the show, which almost perfectly anticipated what they were going to do tonight, which, I mean, that's completely by accident. I had no idea what was going to happen, but they accelerated so much into this show, and I almost feel like season 4, I hadn't really seen any points of comparison until tonight, but I feel like what they did with Decoy, and then it was sort of a slow kind of expanse from there. I don't feel like it really kind of let down at all, but it was the next couple episodes packed a lot of punch as well. And I anticipate that the end of season six will sort of be a souped up version of that. But the same way that people were questioning in season four, are you going to unveil Drew Thompson's identity early? What's that all about? And then ultimately the chase for Drew Thompson happening with a couple episodes to go. I almost feel like pacing-wise, which, like I said, was on my mind anyways, having written about it, they've taken a page out of the season four handbook. And season four was my favorite of the show. I have confidence they're going to be able to pull it off here. But there was just so much tonight that happened. I mean, if you're looking for specifics from me, Jason, I think I would go back to, I anticipated that Boyd was going to kind of take over that meeting that Avery had there, the community meeting that he was having, and that was kind of a false alarm because Boyd said a few things, but it was Loretta that did it. But once or twice a season, Boyd tends to do that, go on these stem winders, take over a meeting. So it kind of nodded to history with that. It nodded to history with Loretta becoming a big part of the show here. She became a big part of the end game of season two, when I think people didn't necessarily see that coming. She proved to be crucial to the resolution of it. They packed a lot in. Any episode where the mole is unveiled in the cold open and it's Wynn Duffy, then, you know, I think that says it all about how much they jam-packed into tonight.
And, you know, this is a great example of the dynamic that we have here. I don't disagree, but after hearing that, I do kind of find myself back in that mindset of Decoy specifically. Because if we really go back and look at Decoy, it was a very good episode until it got crazy. And then that's what we remember. You know, it's like in sports. If you remember this one play, but forget everything that led up to it. And, yeah, as you say that, the whole Wynn Duffy open and how they got him, and he literally just kind of caved because he's a weasel at the end of the day. We didn't even talk about Ms. Hale and her purse decoy, if you will. Like the more we talk about it, the more we're gonna uproot a whole bunch of other things that were great on their own, but because of the drama that came from finally seeing what Zachariah's angle was. And I don't know about you, but to me, I thought for a few seconds there, I sincerely was asking myself, are we about to see the end of Boyd Crowder? So the ramp-up moment was so big that maybe in immediate hindsight overshadowed some of the other stuff that you just mentioned. So I absolutely, after hearing that, have no hesitating that it is unquestionably, and I'll say top five, because I just want to save room for the finale. But,
sure.
No, you know, I'll probably go back and watch it again just because it did feel that good. But I think subconsciously your mind is so in the moment that sometimes some of those things slip through. But as you mentioned, what you just did, yeah, it's got to be up there. And back to the dynamic. This is what I love about this. We pretty much always are on the same page, and I just needed a little – refreshing there.
Well, again, it's interesting because in a way it challenged my assumptions as well. Because like I said, I started writing this column talking about the pacing of the show this year and about how they do unpredictable things. But with the possible exception of season five, they pretty much always make it work. And I even have a phrase in there about how they had an 80% chance of getting this season right. If you look at the first five seasons, and 80% is a pretty good set of odds. And again, I didn't see this coming tonight. I didn't see this kind of acceleration, because we were talking a couple weeks ago about, oh, okay, no mid-season finale. They're not borrowing from season five, and all things being considered, maybe that's a good thing. Just stay as far away from that as possible. If you're borrowing more from the season four handbook, that's a good thing. And, you know, this is a season that definitely, so far, nine episodes in, I think has a chance to be regarded as the very best one yet. Again, season four has been top of the pyramid for me. The one thing that I'm going to question, and once in a while, I think you get this with Justified towards the end of a season. It's not a big thing. but where things will kind of come out of nowhere, I don't necessarily like too much. And this is a real nitpick. This is maybe a Nelson nitpicker because it's not a big thing. But the Seabass thing tonight, where you referenced Catherine with the purse, that was a cool moment. Let me get the tennis bracelet out of my purse. Yeah, he should have insisted on going through the purse himself, no question about it. That's what I was thinking. Don't trust her with a purse. But it came out of nowhere. I mean, maybe off camera, maybe you knew, okay, he's stewing over what happened to his boys and he was used by Avery, but he took the payoff. There was no reason to think that Seabass was that unsatisfied with the way that it all went down. And then he ends up busting in on them in the hotel room trying to jack them. Didn't end well for him, as it generally doesn't for people who mess with Catherine. But what did you think about that? Did you find it a little bit jarring, as I did, on how suddenly that whole subplot moved ahead?
Well, I'll say that it's sudden, and no, I wasn't ready for it. But going back to your previous point about them sort of borrowing from the handbook of, and you mentioned this right in the open of this dialogue here, it's something that they do. And, you know, whether it's a staple or it's a cornerstone or not, it's a thing that they've done repeatedly, so I guess I'm not so put off by it. And the one that comes to mind, only because it was just as sudden, just as much a pick your jaw off the floor moment, was Boyd Crowder and his cigarette bomb. So, I mean, not terribly upsetting or crazy. It's definitely sudden, and I would not have expected it. However, when you see Seabass point a gun at Avery, you just know it's going to end badly.
Right.
I thought it fit into what Justified does, and for that reason, I wasn't put off by it too much, other than just to say, well, I didn't see that coming.
Well, and I wonder also, coming out of last week, it felt like there had been a disproportionate amount of time spent this season having the whole notion of who was the mole back in the day, who ratted out and got Catherine's husband killed. They'd been spending increasingly more time on that. And there were a number of things I thought tonight where you kind of understood, okay, that's where they're going with that. And I think this is why this is going to be regarded as a pivotal moment. And this episode may be eclipsed. I think we both hope that it is in the last 4 weeks, and that this doesn't stand as the high point of the season, because when it's the final season, it really shouldn't work that way. You should have something very, very big and very memorable at the end. And as great as this is, hopefully it's just a jumping off point for even better things. But I kind of felt like the way that it resolved itself, with Wynn getting unmasked there, and then, again, being under the thumb of the marshals and having to do their bidding. The one thing I didn't necessarily understand on the first watch of it was when Wynn came into Boyd's bar and indicated that the robbery's got to go down today, they're going to be moving the money later on. Funny how that turned out to be true after all was said and done. It seemed like Boyd smelled something about Raylan's involvement with Wynn at that point there, and I was a little bit unclear as to how he could have guessed something like that so quickly. And yet, he moved ahead with Boyd's advice and even took Boyd down in the mines with him. So that part of it there, what Boyd had said initially to Ava after Wynn left, that left me kind of scratching my head.
Yeah, that might have been a little bit of a reach. And I love, there's a quote that I stumbled upon years ago, and I'm going to butcher it, but something along the lines of, screenwriting is the art of giving the audience only as much as they need in order to figure the rest out on their own, which is an interesting idea. The problem is sometimes maybe there isn't enough information given, or the dots are not connected properly. And maybe that's all that is. Maybe there was one more piece that they needed to connect that dot. But, you know, it's not terribly crazy to think that maybe make the assumption that Boyd is paranoid enough that the slight change in a person's approach or the way they say whatever it is going to tip him off to thinking that Raylan's got to be involved somehow. But although I noticed it, I didn't spend much time worrying about, you know, did I miss something or is this a stretch? Is it unrealistic? I just, you know, it kind of fits into this idea that I believe that Boyd and Raylan to this point have been going back and forth so much that he's got to be looking for Raylan around every corner at this point. And maybe that's just a poor assumption on my part.
You raise an excellent point. I think you actually came as close to answering my question as probably anybody could. We probably do have to generally lay it at the feet of Boyd's paranoia at this point because, again, he has good reason to be looking around every corner, especially, and again, you talk about having the scales lifted from your eyes. For him to realize that Ava's been informing on him, that had to be the moment that made him just question everything. Having said that, him questioning Ava at the end about betraying him to Uncle Zachariah, good old Zach Randolph, that seems to be a moment where that just reinforces what you were talking about. And I will be very, very curious. I'm sure we haven't seen the last of good old Zach Randolph here, but it's left a little bit unclear to me what his ultimate end game was. Was it just simply to kill Boyd when they're right on the doorstep of getting the money? I thought perhaps it was for him to try to claim the money for himself, but there didn't appear to be any kind of move along those lines. He ended up skedaddling. They didn't end up knowing where he went to. So how do you think that's going to resolve itself? Because there are no loose ends on this show. Everything does get accounted for eventually.
You know, it might be the most intriguing storyline that might not be remembered by a casual first viewing. But without question, the betrayal moment and seeing Boyd, you know, ankle handcuffed with nowhere to run with a whole bunch of money about to come barreling down on top of him was epic. But Zachariah's motivations are not clear in the least. Now, my first thought is, has he been harboring such plots of revenge for so long that is all it was to it? That his sole motivation was to just get the Crowders back for what his face did to Ava, causing her to shoot him.
Bowman. Yeah, Bowman.
Yeah, Bowman. So for me, it seems like on the surface, it's purely revenge. But I'd really like to think that it's a much deeper scenario that we're going to see play out in the next couple episodes.
Yeah, that's definitely got to be accounted for. And if I was to sit here and be cynical, which I'm not inclined to do on a night like this, having been as overwhelmed by everything as I have been, if I was to be cynical, I would say the Uncle Zach thing, which I didn't understand coming in. Again, there were a couple things I didn't understand why they had larded on top of the story coming into this point. If I was going to be cynical, I'd say, well, they did it so that Uncle Zachariah could break up the robbery that we were building to so that the last four episodes would mean something, because otherwise you're looking at a scenario there. Granted, the money probably would have been raining down on Boyd, but it seemed like Raylan had the drop on him if it happened. It seemed like Raylan was waiting there for it, and the season would have wrapped up four episodes early for all intents and purposes. So the Zach thing served its purpose along those lines. In terms of storyline going forward, you have to figure that it's going to play out. He's probably going to make another move at Boyd or Boyd at him. And surely that's not going to do much for the trust between Ava and Boyd. One wonders also, as far as Boyd and the Randolph family here, how long is it going to take for Boyd to realize that Ava has flipped yet again? She came clean to Raylan, and she now is, I don't know if you call this a triple agent or whatever it is in the espionage world, but she's now back at the point of informing on Boyd, and perhaps even more effectively than ever at this point, because Boyd thinks she's on his side.
If that's what it is, if that's all it is, and that she's just flipping back, then sure, we're going to have some problems. Boyd is either going to get caught off guard or he's going to sniff it out before she wants him to. And I don't mean to sound like a conspiracy theorist here, but just throwing it out there, I could be completely wrong about this. What is the likelihood that she is giving Raylan only as much as she needs to preserve her own security? What I'm saying is, I don't know that she necessarily is back on Team Raylan, if you will, but with him there and Ava and Boyd there at that party, she couldn't just say nothing. And I don't recall the exact quote, but I don't remember thinking that she gave a whole lot other than to say it's happening now, where she just might have been between a rock and a hard place with that, having to give him something. But if you're right, and this is a triple agent situation, I think that's extremely interesting. And I don't know if it's the last time she'll flip. And then that goes back to the Ava Crowder sense of self-preservation. So the question is, if the game ends up with the guy who has the ball last, he's just going to keep bouncing until that last moment comes.
In terms of, we've talked about this before, Ava's survival window and what she could do playing it certain ways, because, again, she has the most fascinating poker hand this season in terms of the options, no question about it. We talked about that for her to have confessed to Boyd only under duress that she was informing on him, a little bit too late to ever get his 100% trust back again. I have to believe as well, even if she goes to him preemptively this time and says Raylan sniffed it out, Boyd's going to know that she gave Raylan something. And even though that something turned out to be useless, because, you know, is good old Zach Randolph is the one who sabotaged Boyd, not Raylan. Even with that being the case, that she hasn't hurt him yet, knowing that she gave Raylan something that could have hurt him and could have broken up the whole operation, am I correct in assuming what I think is obvious, that Ava cannot try to go back to Boyd a second time and say, he sniffed me out, and I'm once again informing on you?
No, yeah, you bring up a great point. We saw in that last scene, Boyd, you know that his comments about what did you tell Zachariah absolutely had to be grounded in a continuing skepticism about where her loyalties lie. And if she comes up with anything other than unwavering support and loyalty for Boyd, i.e. maybe divulging that she had to give Raylan something, I don't know if it's the straw that breaks the camel's back, but it won't be good. And I don't know that she comes back from this. Which leaves us with the only other alternative is for her to flip as it works for her and trying to manage both sides until a winner's declared. And if that's the case, I don't think it ends well for Ava either. So she either needs to hope that it just never comes up, that she said anything to Raylan, and she can walk off into the sunset, because if that comes up in any context, I don't think the situation can be mended with her and Boyd.
Absolutely not. Even if we assume that there hasn't been fatal damage done to it already, based on the lack of trust and the rupture that's already occurred. I agree with that completely. There's no way for her to quote-unquote fix it with more quote-unquote truth at this point. We have talked a lot about the events that were the climax of this episode, the party that was being thrown for the community at the Pizza Portal by Avery, with Catherine by his side, publicly announced as his fiancée, that was basically the cover for all of this, and subsequently the robbery that ended up taking place, the attempted robbery afterwards, with Ava starting the fire in the kitchen, the alarm getting pulled, that being the distraction to clear the building. As far as the things leading up to this, again, we find out in the cold open that Wynn was the informant on Catherine. It's unbelievable that Catherine has had the snitch under her nose all along, and one would think that she would have done her due diligence on Wynn to see if he could have been one of the candidates. And she apparently, and again, everybody knows the guy's a weasel, but somehow that got underneath the surface. So Wynn, as we indicated, was informing for the marshals when they threatened to leak that information back to the Dixie Mafia. As far as his past informant work, one of the more interesting beats on this whole thing to me was, again, Loretta, because you had the false as they might say in wrestling, the false finish, so to speak, here. You have Boyd Crowder, who you thought was going to disrupt the meeting there with Avery, except Boyd had bigger fish to fry. It ends up being Loretta that shows up at the meeting, and again, as Raylan indicates, what a pair of balls on her, figuratively speaking, because that dead snake was in her kitchen. That guy Boone, who was apparently the new chief operative for Avery, showed up menacing her. She goes over, she strikes a deal with Boyd, and Boyd made that deal, of course, anticipating he was going to be out of town right after the whole thing, escaping with all of the money from the vault. What were you thinking? Because to me, that was one of the most unexpected moments I've seen in a long time, when Loretta shows up before the meeting at Boyd's place to make that deal with Boyd, somebody as close to Raylan as she's been for so long, to have it end up this way and throwing in her lot. I never saw her as being somebody that committed to criminality. I think they've always kind of played her as someone kind of mischievous and whatever, but that showed a commitment to criminality, I think, greater than maybe everything we've seen put together from her so far.
Well, I think we could do a whole show on what we saw from Loretta today and how that trickles on back to her origin in this series. My first inclination is to say that maybe there's just some sort of allegiance to the Bennett family that we're underselling, because the whole selling pot thing has been a thing for her the entire time. And now that there's a potential it can be legalized, maybe now in her young adult mind, she sees a rational way to do this. By no means was it anything other than ground-shaking surprise on my part. But I was just simply intrigued. And we know that the whole series was not written at once, which I really wanted to believe that it was. The fact that these guys are rewriting each new season as they went and thought, hey, let's bring back Loretta and throw this wrinkle in there, I think was a stroke of genius, because aside from the huge epic moment of maybe losing Boyd when we weren't at the season, the series finale, the Loretta thing was huge. And I texted you while it was happening. I was so confused. I didn't know what was going on at the house. And then when she shows up at the bar, I thought, here we go. Loretta just became a major player in the way this thing is going to end, which to me, again, is an absolute stroke of genius. They pulled that trick out of their hat.
There's another thing I want to throw out there about her and Raylan that just occurred to me tonight, because there's been this ongoing chatter from people who follow the show over a period of time that, and again, we're building to this in the end, that if Raylan gets away from all of this safely in the end to have the family life down in Florida with Wynonna and the baby, but in the meantime, and again, Raylan is always somebody who's been insecure about what kind of a father he's going to be because of the poisonous influence of Arlo on him, which again, we saw hammered out last week one last time, but the chatter that and the observations from people have always been that Loretta has always been this sort of, in a way, surrogate daughter, somebody who has been a sort of repository of any of his parental responsibilities, any of the impulses that he has to protect her. We've always seen that. I see another commonality between them under the heading of how Avery looks at both of them, because Avery, having been introduced as part of the big backstory of Harlan, and you and I have talked about this from time to time, that it sure would be great to get a prequel with Avery and Mags Bennett and all of them. We never saw all of them on canvas. We never saw them with Bo Crowder. Either one of them we never saw with Bo Crowder. But Avery is sort of the living embodiment of the backstory of Harlan, because he was the biggest, baddest cock of the walk back in the day. And you can tell by the way he looks at people how he deals with them. He doesn't have any respect for Boyd, but he sure respected Bo. Bo was somebody that he thought of as, if not necessarily an equal, somebody who was pretty substantial in his own right. He really big-timed Raylan about, your daddy might have been a criminal down here, but he was not at the level that I would have known who the hell he was. And he had to have looked at Walt McCreed the same way. Walt McCreed was also ran the same way that Arlo was. I wonder if that's going to be something that's uncovered as Raylan and Loretta have more dealings in the last four episodes here. The fact that they're not just both descended from criminals, they're both descended from also-ran criminals, which really kind of separates them from Boyd and so many other characters on the canvas.
I'd like to take a moment to strongly suggest that the folks at Netflix get working on that idea. I need Netflix or Amazon Prime or one of them to put up the money and get the people that they need to get and do a Justified prequel series spinoff, because that would be nuts, especially now looking back on this specific episode. Now, with all that in mind, it is an interesting dynamic. Because with Boyd, you know, he's the prince of the heavy hitter. But, you know, McCready wasn't anything. And sure, Arlo Gibbons was almost a criminal reject, almost. You're definitely onto something there. The question is, how does it play out? How does that factor in? And this is the beautiful part. I think I said this last week. I have no idea. And that's what's beautiful about it. I actually think it would diminish my excitement if I had a firm grip on what I thought was going to happen, especially in the regard of Loretta and Raylan. And then the other thing I'll say is to the surrogate parent thing, I really think that that's part of our human nature. We are inclined to want to believe that there's more there than there might be. I think it's definitely there for Raylan. I think Raylan feels that this is a situation where he maybe gets a dry run. He could help somebody sort of already established as not an adult necessarily, but an existing human that survived some years before he goes and tries it on his own kid. I just don't think Loretta's having any of it, and I don't think she really has from the beginning. So maybe on Raylan's part, but if Loretta's thinking that way, she sure hasn't led us to believe that it was the case.
I think that's definitely true. And what would be very juicy about the prequel is that it would almost be the photo negative of the Justice League, wouldn't it? Because it would be Mags and Bo Crowder and Avery, and it would be this whole council of bad guys. It would be all these disparate criminals out there, these big timers down in the hills working out things. That would be an unbelievable series if they would ever deign to do it. And if you have the right creative team, you can make it work, because again, Better Call Saul, as I've been covering that, they've done a tremendous, tremendous job. And there have been two, I would say, Mike the Cleaner heavy episodes, the last two ones, and especially the Breaking Bad faithful have really popped for that. So I don't think it would take too much, Jason, to really satisfy the Justified crowd if we were ever going to get something like that. It's probably a pipe dream, because I don't think they want to go further on Elmore Leonard's universe. If Elmore Leonard was still around, maybe it'd be more likely. But a man can dream.
Well, and the funny thing here is, as we're starting to see more original content coming out for on these streaming sites, because, you know, House of Cards made that legitimate with their Academy Award nomination, or Emmy nomination, sorry. But I will say this, I don't want to crush the pipe dream, and if anything, I'd like to maybe keep it going. There is a movie coming out, not relatively soon, but it's in the works, in that superhero realm called Suicide Squad, which most of our Justified listeners probably aren't in tune with. And the only reason I bring it up is it's all about bad guys. So the idea that we could have a series, even if it was a short-lived series, two or three seasons only, where you saw the Justified world, but only from the perspective and only involving, for the most part, the bad guys, the idea is already in the works elsewhere. So it isn't really that far-fetched, and I think it would be phenomenal.
Well, not only that, and not so much as far as on a pure bad guy level, but as far as a prequel deal at FX, no less, it has come out that supposedly Kurt Sutter and the crew, they're going to be bringing back a Sons of Anarchy prequel, the years before Jax and all of them, and the original, I don't know what the terminology is. I think it's the original nine or whatever it is of the members of the club from back in the late 60s into the 70s, and sort of show some of that. So it's already being done at the same network, and one would think that they are lobbying Graham Yost and company to think about doing this. And, one can only hope that FX, if they have any such efforts underway, that they would be successful. But that point had sort of occurred to me, again, through the prism of Avery, who ends up holding this party in tonight's episode for the public. It's a chance to address them, again, similar to the way that the Carol, the Cole executive, was trying to address the public in season two in a meeting that backfired where Boyd Crowder ended up kind of taking it over. Boyd had some words to say, but I think Max Bennett was the one in particular that really tried to stir things up there. And again, a little bit of a misdirection tonight. You expected it to be Boyd, especially once Avery had mentioned him there, but clearly Boyd wanted to be as circumspect as he could be under the circumstances and not go too far with it. When Loretta started speaking up against Avery, I wasn't necessarily surprised that she was successful, because she was able to play the outsider card against him, and we've seen Boyd do that time and time again, whether it be against Robert Quarles or anybody else. But again, just for her to have the sheer balls to show up at that meeting and do that, knowing what's in store for her in the form of Boone and some of these other assassins out there, that was as big a holy crap moment for me tonight as any of them. And in an episode filled with them, I think that really says something.
It's hard to sort of recalibrate and express exactly what was going on, but right as Boyd was beginning to sort of ramp up, and I forget what season it was, you have to help me out with this, but there was a meeting with a woman there that was going to try to do something with the mines, and Boyd came in, and he was his typical self. He had his preacher voice on, and it was vintage Boyd Crowder, and that's really where I thought this was going. But in an artistic change of direction, before he could get any momentum, Loretta jumps right in. And I got to say, I think that was probably the grandest Loretta moment we've seen to date. And I'm pretty sure we'll be saying that again before this is all over with. But it was a great moment. It was a great scene. And it was absolutely a surprise. I don't know how better to say it. You're watching it, you just let it happen, but that half a heartbeat before she starts, you probably had no idea that she was going to go there. And definitely not try to twist the town against Avery.
Well, the funny thing is, I wasn't looking at the screen when it first happened, and I started hearing a female's voice, and some of those twangs on there are a tad similar. My first thought is, why is Ava, of all people, popping up? And then I look up and I see that it's Loretta, that I got the voice wrong. And yeah, I guess that just shows my level of disbelief that Loretta would have pulled such a thing. But it was truly remarkable in an episode filled with remarkable moments. And the great thing about Justified, this is my last point, is that even on a night like tonight with all the dramatic developments, and I had texted you and said, if this mind thing comes to a head tonight, this makes my all-time list. Because I could feel it as I was watching it. Just having everybody in that room for that event there with the robbery about to take place right underneath their feet, knowing that the season's been building to this, just having the tension to me was unbearable in a way that it was like when I was watching Breaking Bad, and that's one of the highest compliments I could possibly pay. But even on a night like tonight, there's always some things that make you laugh with the dialogue. And you even texted me about that towards the end there when Rachel's talking to Raylan and, hey, how come we weren't able to get Boyd out of this, whatever. And Raylan makes the point to her about we might not be in, doing the icky shuffle, but we're definitely in the red zone. And she goes, what's the icky shuffle? Now, if she hasn't seen the commercials that have been on recently, one would think she would know who he is from that, if not from back in the day.
I love that we can extrapolate that that Rachel's sitting at home one day watching Icky Woods get real excited about his number coming up at the deli counter. You're always going to get those moments, and that's the great thing. And we can point out episodes that aren't on the great list, on the all-time great list. There's still those moments. This had those moments, and then it also had the epic moments. So, yeah, top five, and I can be convinced it could be higher than that.
Well, and that's the thing, too. We do this in a hermetically sealed bubble because – unlike anybody else that's out there, and I don't say this to take shots at anybody, but I don't think that any of the other podcasts or reaction shows out there are literally right on the heels of as it's going off the air. I think we're probably about the only ones that do that. So it's like we're in a hermetically sealed chamber. I have no idea what the rest of the world is saying right now. I remember saying last year when we watched episode 5.5, Shot All to Hell, that I was going to be very curious to see if we were along with the consensus out there that was one of the best episodes ever. And it turns out we were. I think we're going to be part of the consensus this time, and 6.9, Burned, is one of the best ever. But again, these are the kind of shows in particular that I love breaking down with you, Jason, because anytime we have a chance to sort of go uber fanboy and talk about and point out all the great things that they did, to me, that's a lot more fun than having to kind of scratch our heads as we did from time to time last year and kind of wait for things to pick up. But I haven't been disappointed by any of season six. Great breaking it down with you tonight, my friend. And one can only hope that somehow they find a way to make the last four episodes epic as well.
And I'm sure they will, as we have faith in the system.
Absolutely. And episodes like the one tonight are why we do. Thank you very much, Jason, for breaking us down with me. Thank you all, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 537.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.